This is Coda Radio, episode 595 for November 12th, 2024. Hello, friend, and welcome in to Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the whole world of technology. My name is Chris, and over there, fighting off a whole other species of lizard, it's our host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
Welcome to the jungle of Florida. Well, you will be eaten by A. Is it an alligator?
Sure.
Classic. Classic way to go. That's your coat classic of getting killed in Florida. B. Let's be honest, somebody on a massive amount of meth. That's pretty classic, too. C, a python from Brazil.
Could be. Why it's there, who knows?
Or a new challenger. This is like a 1990s arcade where you put your quarter up and the challenger approaches. And this is various species of monitor lizard, who, if you're not familiar, are they're like rage iguanas, basically.
Man, it's like if Mother Nature doesn't take you out, like, the animals she leaves behind will. You got, and then I hear your drivers are awful too.
Well, the meth doesn't help.
I guess you got nice winters though, so there's that.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah,
worth
that,
it.
Yeah. I've been watching sort of the fallout of all of that Intel Arrow Lake drama, and it seems that Intel's desktop shipments are down pretty bad. And because AMD's desktop shipments have remained kind of unchanged and unaffected, AMD now accounts for 25% of all x86 processor shipments. Now, it gets a little different if you include OEMs, so I will make that disclosure. But isn't this interesting to see kind of AMD, I don't know, an area where they grew a lot, I guess, apparently, was in mobile CPUs. A lot more
sense.
Use, yeah. Intel's new line, I guess, their new spin on the Arrow Lake stuff is, yeah, it didn't really go as planned. VP and GM of client and AI technical marketing sat down with Hot Hardware, and he said the Arrow Lake chips have solid bones in them, but the company has identified factors that, quote, can combine to produce some pretty wild unattended effects. And they realized that the issues were not with other manufacturers or operating systems, but with themselves. Still no full plan yet, though. I mean, we're watching kind of this weird shift where ARM and AMD and just all of this are really coming at Intel, which has really been the sort of dominant PC market player for so long, especially in the business world. And it's just like a thousand cuts between Intel's own internal issues, AMD continuing to execute really well, ARM continuing to execute really well. I just still wonder where we see Intel in 5 years. Do you have any thoughts?
It's rough. I mean, I've heard on kind of financial podcasts, folks just talking about Intel just basically tapping out and being sold and split up, which seems insane to me. And then I remembered what happened to GE. So We also, I don't think it's something we should talk about on the show because my whole podcast feed is full of this crap, but the election stuff.
Yeah.
Not great if you're excited about that CHIPS Act, right?
Yeah, and that's actually hitting Intel hard today as we record. Their stock's down like almost 5%.
Right, because that was something Intel was really trying to partner with the government on that to, was it Ohio? I keep forgetting where they were trying to build their thing.
Yeah, but it's basically onshoring, you know, chip production, and you get some government money.
So I don't know that that's going to necessarily happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not in the same way.
The market seems to think it's not happening. The market seems to think it's dead.
The market seems to be reacting pretty strongly. And I would almost argue Intel, much like GE, is it too late?
I don't think so, right?
Okay.
I mean, if AMD's only now reaching 25% of desktop chip shipments, that's still a massive market that Intel has to lose. And you got to figure there's a lot of OEMs, and I don't know, they just... seems like it's still their game to lose, but they're in the process of losing it right now. We're watching them lose it right now. That's kind of what it feels like.
So what do you think is like the positive, like the path to recovery for Intel?
Good desktop and mobile processors and good GPUs. And if they can focus on those three fundamentals and actually make really good competitive products that don't produce a lot of heat, that are reasonable on energy consumption and maintain optimal application compatibility, you know, maybe throw in a few like nods towards the AI community. If I were Intel, of course, this is my pet hobby horse. But I'd have a team of developers in the Intel software division making sure every popular AI project has some sort of fork or port or translation layer or container that they make that interprets CUDA to Intel Arc, anything to get those Intel Arc GPUs in the game. Because they're good GPUs, they're built well, and they're well-priced, but you just can't do much with them. And so I would have a software team at Intel working my butts off on that. It wouldn't be the only thing I'd focus on, but I think if they really got their GPU game up, they kept executing on processors, not like Arrow Lake, but like others, because we have seen in the past, semi-recent past, really good CPU releases by Intel. So it seems like it's still within their grasp. In fact, I don't know if you'd agree, Mike, but it kind of felt like this Arrow Lake disaster was kind of deviation from the trend line. Like Intel had been kind of trending better in terms of CPUs, qualities and features.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I guess I'm gonna be a little cheeky here, but I would almost say make the Xeon great again. Oh, I'm serious. I mean, I have memories as a young lad, you know, back in the docks to Dublin. I just got out of the city and I was working by the docks thinking, damn, if I had a Xeon, I'd have a lovely lass, some more Guinness, and all the computing power I could possibly want. And now I'm like, nah, I'm cool with an M4, thanks.
Oh, it'd be wonderful.
It'd be wonderful. Dear St. Patrick could clear those snakes so much faster.
Well, if you want to hear all the cursing and racism get cut out, join us live on Tuesdays, typically at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. We have a 24/7 chat room that's going right now as we do the show, too, at coder.show/matrix. And if you have a podcasting 2.0 app, well, we're live right there in your app, and you could tap and listen in your app that you already use. We love it when you join us live because it just kind of gives it that extra vibe. You know what I mean? And I got a question before we get into the meat of the show today. So please do boost in and tell me, how long do you like your Coda Radio? I've been getting different bits of feedback recently, and I would like to just take an informal survey of the audience. So let us know. Send a boost. How long do you like your episodes of Coda Radio? And we'll get to them in the next couple of episodes. Now, Mr. Dominic, I think we should talk about the big news. In fact, I feel like we should have some sort of like breaking news because it just happened right before the show started.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Mr. Dominic, we are on the ground here in Redmond, Washington, learning that the tech giant Microsoft has released .NET 9, and they're very excited about it. I guess.
A lot going on here. Yes.
Yeah. Too much?
We're maybe okay. Not.
All right.
To be fair, Wes seems pretty enthusiastic.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I looked at it and I tried to find like four or five key things about .NET 9. And of course, performance and memory is at the top of the list. They did like a lot of stuff to reduce memory usage, get higher throughput. AI integrations high on their list. New AI building blocks include Microsoft extensions.ai and vector data abstractions, and improved tokenizer support and enhanced tensor operations for AI development. So dark matter devs, that their boss wants them to do some AI work, they just got that in .NET 9. Of course, areas around web development have been improved. Native open API support now. MAUI has been enhanced performance-wise, reliability-wise, and now has some nice improvements to project templates. So MAUI's still getting love. There you go. And Visual Studio got an update.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more than a little skeptical about MAUI because of my horrible history with Xamarin. But sure, we can continue that. I think Quest pointed out in our chat, the link, they call it Link or LinQ. I think they call it Link over there, right?
Might be.
That's what all the cool kids call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like what they're doing in terms of the kind of making that a bit more performant and a lot of good Copilot integration. Seems like they're doing Copilot support in the C# language itself, which I mean, party on .NET developers, right?
Yeah.
So good stuff. I mean, they're marching forward. Again, do not trust them at cross-platform frameworks because they will totally screw you.
Maybe that was the old Microsoft, man.
Yeah, right.
That's the old one. Haven't you heard about .NET 9 with building blocks and tokenizers and better MAUI? I feel like you don't know about their better MAUI. I feel like that's what's happening here. It's neat. It's nice to see. We haven't dug into it much because it literally just happened as the show was going live. But there you go. .NET 9 is out.
Please, Snake Jazz.
Okay. So the world is playing a little Snake Jazz as the snake eats up the top of the Octaverse list. The 2024 GitHub Octaverse report is out. And they say it reveals significant shifts in global software development landscape, primarily driven by, guess it, AI adoption.
Oh, who would have guessed?
Also, we'll get into this, but it seems like maybe the definition of a developer is expanding a little bit, and those folks are attracted to Python. But yes, so the research is done. They've got quite the chart. They say developer communities are expanding rapidly outside of North America and Europe, with India projected to become the largest developer population by 2028, followed by a significant growth in Brazil, Nigeria, and other emerging markets. So you have growth around the world combined with AI. Python overtook JavaScript, if you can believe it, as the most popular programming language on GitHub. TypeScript has entered the top three. You know, again, it's kind of data science, type-safe development shift in general. There's 70,000 new generative AI projects created with a 59% increase in contributions on GitHub and 92% spike in Jupyter Notebook usage and growing adoption of infrastructure as code languages like HCL, which they say reflects a diversification of developer roles beyond traditional software development. And 39 million secrets were leaked and detected using an AI-powered security tool, helping developers fix vulnerabilities up to 12 times faster. So I think, you know, they got a lot of stuff in here. You know, increased adoption of Jupyter Notebook usage and languages like HCL. They got, obviously, big growth in India, largest developer population by 2028. But Python just blowing everything away in usage. That really struck me, Mike. Why is Python just on a rocket ship of growth right now?
Well, you can't ignore the hypey elephant in the room, the AI stuff, right?
Yeah.
AI is, I would say, probably the number one reason. You've got things like TensorFlow, PyTorch. The other big area they've been doing well in that is less hypey, but you know, people are actually doing lots of real industry work, is data science, which, again, they have NumPy and a bunch of other things there. I was a little surprised, but then on second look, I was like, nah, that makes sense. How much Jupyter Notebooks, and I don't think we should dive too deep into what those exactly are, but they're like interactive Python notebooks, basically. There's all kinds of like front-end apps you can use for them. A lot of scientists use them. A lot of data scientists use them too. For how, according to GitHub, how much that adoption has grown, which, again, makes sense, right, if it's being used in these spaces. Python is also a good utility scripting language, right? I have a bunch of Python scripts that I do stuff for server management with. You've got things like FastAPI and Flask and Django for web development. It's got a wide breadth of things it can do. It's also a semi-popular scripting language in the game industry. For, you know, a lot of people are now moving to kind of Python scripting. I think Unreal can do it now too. So, you know, that's Qt, whatever they call themselves these days, has a Python interface that you can develop desktop applications in. It's deep into AI, deep into data, pretty deep into web.
Yep.
And it's got a wide breadth of capabilities.
Yeah. So it's more popular than ever because all of those areas, data, academics, you know, people doing STEM work, all that's growing. Plus the AI hype is growing. It's something. You know what? I love it because I think our recommendation like 5-8 years ago on the show was learn Python. I think we were like,
right.
Somebody wrote on, we're like, they gave us a look, we're like, yeah, you should probably learn Python. It's sticking around. And boy, has that been true. The snake is really eating up the whole world. I mean, I don't know. For me, for some reason, larger than JavaScript really stands out. Just because there's so much JavaScript out there. There's so much. So it's pretty impressive. All hail the snake, Mike.
It is the year of the snake.
Coder.show/membership. Thank you to our Coder QA crew who has been keeping us going and the boosters who keep this show on the air. I'm also opening up this spot right now, which you're listening to our community sponsors. Perhaps folks that are in the audience at the podcast ad market has collapsed. Please save our show discounted rate. You can get more details by emailing me at chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com. I actually think it'd be pretty neat to feature a listener's like business or product or service or whatever it might be. I mean, might as well, right? We got these spots available, and I can only tell you about the membership so many times. So chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com if you'd like to set up a short-run sponsorship, or who knows, maybe it becomes a long-term fling. You know what I'm saying? In the meantime, if you're not in a position to sponsor us, you, of course, can set your support on autopilot with our membership program. We have one for the entire network and one for the podcast. The podcast one is coder.show/membership. The network one is jupiter.party. But a lot of you, I've learned, like to just support at your own cadence, at your own amount, on your own time, at your own frequency, on your own terms. And that's where the boost comes in. You just need a new podcast app, podcastapps.com. Apps like Fountain make it really easy to get started, but there's a plethora of choices out there. So you just grab one of those new podcast apps, you load it up, and you boost in, and a message above 2,000 sats, we'll read it right here on the show. You support the show, we get to read your message, we have a lot of fun with it. Either way you go, we really appreciate it. And our members, they now get something kind of brand new. It's sort of soft launch. It's a soft launch. I'm working on it still, so it's a soft launch. But I'm going to try handing out like the whole bootleg version of the stream. It got over like over 100 and something downloads last time I tried it. So it seems like the first trial went pretty well, although I heard from none of you. But it seems like the first trial went pretty well. I've probably already said all this, but just so you know, there is going to be a live stream version available, which does have some pre-show stuff in it. And that's just as a thank you to our members, too. So you can get that by going to coder.show/membership. There you go. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you for your support. All right. So this one caught my attention. A neurology ICU nurse has set up the red flag, I guess, and she's trying to raise awareness about the creep of AI in hospitals. So there's a piece that she's written, and it's a firsthand account from this person's perspective at a neurointensive care in San Diego at a very high-tech hospital. It was founded by Qualcomm's billionaire owner, and a few other people donated, and they raised some debt as well. And they created like the most high-tech hospital in California. And she thinks, or he, like, I think it's a him, he believes it's influencing some of the aggressive adoption of AI technologies. He describes the gradual integration of AI, where at first they didn't really even call it AI back in 2018. It was like advanced medical record monitoring tool. And then things kept advancing. And then when the AI hype really started a couple of years ago with ChatGPT, it went into full-on continuous monitoring mode. And it's trying to do complex patient activity prediction and ambient documentation. And of course, this nurse says these new AI systems have essentially removed the nurse's ability to effectively advocate for patient needs. It also reduces their ability to kind of like develop their intuitive response because they're not involved anymore. So not developing that skill set, which could be disastrous one day. And of course, there's privacy concerns. This ambient documentation sort of running all the time, using God knows what to transcribe. And at the same time, this hospital, which is one of California's nicest, is so overwhelmed and understaffed that for years now, they have had very sick, very, very bad off patients overflowing into the hallways where they've set up official stations in their hallways. And if you're in there for a while, it can take up to a week before you get a room. At the beginning of the year, the nurses held a strike trying to raise public awareness about how poorly they're understaffed. And while the story doesn't come out and say it, you add these two things together, it seems like the hospital thinks, well, the way to solve this is to crank up the AI. So there's cameras everywhere. There's monitoring systems everywhere. They're doing facial stuff. They're doing automatic note charting. So, like, you go in there and you add a couple of words, and then this thing's auto-populating the rest of the notes with just generated text. That doesn't seem very useful either. And on the long tail of it, it's creating nurses that don't know how to do anything other than interact with what the tablet tells them to do.
Oh, my God.
I know. The article says there's obvious concerns. Like sometimes when I would tell patients, their response would be, quote, oh my God, it's like mass surveillance. They're going to listen to everything we say, everything we do. They're going to track us. Yeah.
Yep. It's really scary. I mean, to think that the medical professionals would be in some way subject to the decisions of these AIs. I know people are going to email in. I'm just going to stop you right now. I get it, right? I've seen the papers that, oh, they can do it. But I don't know. Don't, I mean, maybe I'm an old-fashioned guy here because I kind of trust my nurse or doctor more than I trust the computer. I mean, I have a Florida Blue Cross health insurance.
Okay.
And to do anything, I have to go through the app. And I have the fancy one. I'm on the Obamacare Gold Plan, which is a fortune. So just like, let's say, you know how it is with kids. Kid gets the sniffles in the winter, right? Which, you know, it's Florida. There's like 10 things I have to fill out on the app. And then inevitably, at the end, it comes to some conclusion. It's like, that's not exactly right. And then you wait for 45 minutes for it to like connect you to an operator to be like, oh, okay, we'll make you an appointment.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, but I do it that way because it's cheaper. If I call the doctor, if I call her directly, his doctor.
I hate that too.
I have to pay an extra like $50 for the appointment.
Yep. So, well, this is how it's going to work. It's going to be AI chat. Is going to be your first level of diagnosis now.
It's terrible. Also, like, he's a kid. So, I'm sorry. I just don't think Teladoc is, like, an appropriate, or any of those, like, you know.
Yeah. Wes points out, do they charge you less? No. No, they don't charge you less.
No, they do. Yeah. If you do Teladoc, they charge you less.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's not AI stuff. This nurse points out, too, something that, you know, I wouldn't think of because I'm not a nurse. But they write, when you try to reduce everything down to a machine that one person relies on to carry out decisions, then there's only one set of eyes on that patient. Right. That may be efficient, but by creating efficiency, you're also creating a lot of potential points of failure. So efficiency isn't as efficient as tech bros think it is. And I listened to a couple of like CEOs. One was a TED Talk. One was an interview on CNBC. They of these AI companies that are selling these products to hospitals, these CEOs, they talk about this like it is an existential crisis that we need to get this deployed as fast as possible because only their technology is going to save the medical industry because it's so desperately destroyed and it needs their help. And oh, by the way, they actually said this. Oh, by the way, if we don't do it, well, then it's going to be done outside the country. So you got to let us do it. Like that old one. Like, oh, well, if you don't let us do it, then China's going to do it. They start with the, oh my God, it's just so, so critical that we get in there as fast as possible. It's a massive crisis, and then they kind of top it off with the, and if you don't let us, China's gonna. And I don't know. It just feels like a hard sell to me. And also, like, these LLMs, not this good. They're just not this good. You would need a team of operators constantly reviewing the output, but that's not how these things work. They don't staff up, right? They're trying to reduce staff.
Of course.
So that's not what's gonna happen. I don't know, man. I guess, like, you could see it. You could see it where it would be reasonable, and I wonder if the audience could see like a reasonable middle ground here. I'll steel man one, and that is aggregating information and kind of like, you know, generating reports on how the hospital's doing, how the patients are doing, how, you know, certain metrics are being reached, not reached. I could see that kind of thing. You know, maybe turning the hospital's own diagnosis into like it's a searchable database. Maybe, perhaps. But it just seems that hallucinations are extremely, extremely critical in the medical field. Just like if you were in, you know, some sort of like military application or some sort of nuclear energy application, if you've got an LLM that's vitally involved in that, every little hallucination really, really matters. And I just don't understand how you can accommodate for that with the current technology. I don't know what the solution is because I wouldn't want some stodgy old fool in DC deciding where we draw the lines on how LLMs get used or don't get used. But it seems obvious that this probably shouldn't be one of them, just like we probably shouldn't have it managing missiles. You know, we don't need LLMs figuring out when to launch the missiles either, just like we don't need it deciding people's medical care. Lives are on the line.
You're not looking for like a Red Dawn scenario here.
Yeah. Like okay. It's just wild how it happens here. You know, like not McDonald's, right? Not the diner down the street. Not where I get my hair cut.
The hospital.
Right. Yeah. Or not even the post office, right? The post office. No, it's the hospital, Mike. And it's like we get this stuff and we don't even go to 11. We go to like 15 with it. Instead of like starting at a 5 and letting it mature and develop for like 20 years before we both go make life decisions and medical care.
Well, you hit it on the head though, right? It's why medical? Well, that's where the wages are very high and they'd like to cut them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah.
It is exactly that. It is an attempt to try to solve an industry problem that they don't want to throw money at and hire people.
Okay,
and,
but problem in air quotes, right? If you looked at these private hospital companies, it's not like they're broke. I just,
yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah.
It's problem. It's just...
It's like the CEO situation where the doctors make an outrageous amount of money and then everybody else makes a lot less. And then they charge you a ton of money for it. It's just so simple in my mind. Like, wait, let's see this technology prove itself out. How about it writes decent sentences first? Because they still sound like crap. They're okay, but they sound like a machine wrote them still. So how about we get like decent sentences out of these things, and then we start deciding if somebody needs their spleen cut out or something like that. Like, it's really sad that they just take it this far. And this nurse is trying to pull the alarm on this, the alarm bell. And I kind of feel like based on this hospital's previous history, it's just going to get left ignored, just like their complaints about the understaffing have.
For years, right?
And they ratchet it up, too. That's the other thing, Mike, is they ratchet it up over time.
Yep.
And I wonder, like, do the patients just...
Can they tell, right? Do they see a difference?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Let us move on. But there you go. That's a weird way that it's just kind of been incorporated over time. And then, you know, the vendors basically started incorporating it because it's trendy. It is what it is.
Ask not what your podcast can boast for you, but what you can boast for your podcast.
All right. Well, we have a set of boosts to get into, and Bobby Pin came in as our baller booster with 50,000 sats.
Hey, Rich Lobster!
Oh, great. This must have been while we were live. Oh yeah. I don't catch y'all live very often. Happy Election Day. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did we record? Oh, we did record last week. And look at us. We didn't even mention it in the show. You know, people will say, oh, those guys get political. It was Election Day. And I don't even know if we mentioned it. Maybe briefly. Appreciate that, Bobby Pin. Are you impressed with us right now? You should be. I'm impressed with us. We just stayed focused on the task at hand. You know what I mean?
See that?
Yeah. Yeah. PC Noref comes in with 2,000 sats. For the LLM topic, try Cimetheory. Cimetheory. It has all of the LLMs in one place. It also has a bunch of other features like memory that you might want to try out. Reference alert, not a plug. It's done by the guys of the Average Podcast. Okay. Well, I will check out. So it's... there's a couple of...
Cimetheory.ai. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, yep. I will try that. Thank you. I am still looking. I've had a couple sent in, and I have not checked that one out yet. So appreciate that, Nolriff. Jordan Bravo comes in with 5,555 sats. He says, my vote for favorite code editor is NeoVim, configured to be a full IDE with Lisp, debugging, etc. However, Zed is a contender to replace NeoVim for me. It's still early days for Zed.
Yeah, Zed is could be the new kid on the block. I actually got some people when I did that poll mentioning Zed because it wasn't on the poll.
I hear a lot of Zed too.
Yeah, shockingly enough. So I'll give you the quick order. Our winner was VS Code, duh. Followed by Vim, which included NeoVim, right? So any Vim, JetBrains, and in last with half as much as JetBrains, but a more positive showing than one would expect was Emacs.
Emacs always holding on, not always in the top, but holding on. VS Code does not surprise me. We just had somebody boost in to make VS Code the official text editor of Linux Unplugged. Don't know how I feel about that. You know? Vmax comes in with 17,345 sats. First one is White Source, although they rebranded as something a few years ago, is the tool you're looking for to scan dependencies. Remember we were talking about this last week. You can hook into your CI/CD system and it checks out each linked included dependency. It's best for flagging which products have CVEs due to an old dependency, but it also will catch typo squatting. There is a better way to hedge than just be better. Use yarn.lock caching, restrict to only company approved virtual repos by default. And if only yarn, he says, but only if yarn was declarative and it had its own language and an OS and could guarantee reproducibility, but nothing like that seems to exist. Next! Excuse me.
Yeah, we got a couple of these. Someone else also wrote in that GitLab has a dependency checker. Apparently, there is some kind of GitHub feature that you can, I think you have to purchase it, but can use. So, yeah, there's a lot of options here. Yeah, and yarn is yarn.
Sam, thank you very much. Appreciate that boost there, Baymax. Sam Squanch is here with 9,001 sats.
It's over 9,000!
Yeah, tech debt is a thing, but I see more and more devs yak shaving, wanting to indefinitely repeat refactor bits of code just to make it beautiful in the name of tech debt. I find that dev culture frustrating, but weirdly common.
Yeah, it's super annoying.
I agree. It's like this, people will focus on, the colors or things that they can, things that everybody can have an opinion on, and then they'll get stuck on it. But beyond just that, I've noticed this with open source projects too. Like they'll just kind of get stuck in this refactoring all the time kind of thing. I don't know. Sometimes you need to rebuild and throw it out. Sometimes tech debt is good. I can't believe I'm saying it, but sometimes tech debt is good.
Well, so my big pet peeve is, and this is particularly bad in the Ruby community, the guys who are like, I can do this like weird metaprogramming thing or use these obscure features and do this in one line. I'm like, yeah, okay. But, if you did it the simple, stupid way, it would be much easier to read in 2 years when I have to go back to it.
Yes.
And I don't remember the context of what we were working on. Like, I am not a fan. All right, people are going to yell at me. I am not a fan of, phrase it positively. In most cases, I prefer the dumb, simple syntax for things, even if it's a little more verbose, because that stuff is much easier to read in the future.
Yeah.
And I know, well, you could get the controller action down, but it's just not worth it. You may feel good now, right? But don't get me started on it. It's one of those weird like alpha geek things that I find super annoying. It's like, man, I could have done that in like two lines with a couple ternary operators and a little bit of meta program. Like, why? Just do the control statement. That way it's simple. And what if you need to hand this off to be maintained by someone junior who doesn't know all the fancy tricks?
Amen, brother. Amen, brother. Amen. You tell him. And I think, I think you're right. My browser. I tell you what. I have this problem with Firefox and Bitwarden, I think it is. Like when I load new tabs, it just slows down for a minute, but then it picks back up. But Sam Squanch, appreciate that boost, and I think you got him fired up. I always like that. Bug-eyed Stormtrooper comes in with a Jar Jar boost, 5,000 sats.
You're a boost!
He loves the longer shows. Always gives more time for bacon. Well, you know what? For you, here's a little bacon.
Tasty.
Yeah. Nice kind of Stormtrooper-y bacon. That's real nice.
It means it never hits the spot.
DeCairo's here with 10,101 sats.
Welcome.
And he's feeling the AOL welcome, and it's a little weird.
Well,
NPM definitely has its issues, and Node itself doesn't really solve for any of this. There is the new Dino project that just launched version 2 and has been taking on these type of security issues for a while by requiring permissions like network and file system access to be explicitly granted. That does actually look promising. I don't use Dino for much of my work, but it's definitely on my roadmap. Between Node.js, Bun, and Dino, there's a lot of great options for JavaScript development right now. Oh, and did I mention? Dino is written in Rust.
Ugh, God damn it. Well, I will say, I keep hearing about Dino, and I have yet to, in the several years Dino has been around, actually speak or text or I am with someone who actually uses Dino, but it sounds great is what they always say. So
what is it with that? What is that? It's like one of those things. Oh yeah, I've heard of that. Sounds great.
I can tell you what it is. What? I can tell you exactly what it is.
Okay. What?
So one, it's a semi self-selecting set, right? Cause I hang out, people I know are a lot of contractors or indie studios.
Fair.
It's a lot easier to sell a contract in a common framework than it is to sell it in something new that they haven't heard of.
Of course.
Yep. Everybody knows most of your corporate agents, officers, whatever you want to call them, who are doing the buying, have heard of Node. They've heard of Rails. They've heard of Django, right? They probably drink from the .NET titty all the time. But Dino? What the hell is Dino? That's something they bought for their kid.
Yeah, isn't that the dinosaur on The Simpsons?
It doesn't help that it looks a cute little dinosaur for the logo.
The Simpsons.
Jeez.
You know, but honestly, The Flintstones was the original Simpsons, so not that weird if you think about it.
You know what? The Flintstones is great.
Yeah, it's good TV. I still enjoy it. All right, that wraps up everybody above the 2,000 sat cutoff. Thank you, everybody who does boost in. Our sat streamers, we had 17 of you out there, and collectively, not a big one, but of course, when they're shorter, that's what happens. 6,721 sats that were streamed in. When you combine that with our boosters, well, Mr. Dominic, we stacked 105,834 sats. Not a crazy banger, but the show continues. With your support, it survives and fights yet another week to actually cut through all the tech BS and tell you like it really is. Brought to you directly by our audience. And you can too participate with a new podcast app at podcastapps.com, like Fountain FM, Podverse, Castomatic, Podcast Guru, and many more at podcastapps.com, or set it on autopilot at coder.show/membership.
God, I feel so triumphant and hopeful now. What was that music?
You don't recognize it? I thought maybe...
Is that Sequest?
You got it, buddy.
Damn.
It was Sequest. Yeah, it was this video game version.
Guess what I was watching last night?
Sequest?
No, I was gonna. I did message you guys. But then I couldn't... An old love called to me. Yeah, I gotta guess.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica.
TNG.
Oh, geez. TNG never leaves. I'm actually in a long-term committed relationship to TNG, and I just sort of date all the other shows.
I'm back where I belong at Farpoint.
Good.
It was great. We had a little encounter there, a rendezvous, if you will.
Yeah, pre-beard.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's TNG is so good between season 3 and 5.5, 6 that I set up a live streaming service in my home that just streams season 3 through like 6 all the time, 24/7, so I can turn the TV on and always tune in.
Are you serious?
100% serious.
So when you just walk in the room, turn the TV on, and you just get like whatever episode is currently in the queue?
Yeah, just like back in the day too. It's like midpoint in the episode, you know, whatever. It doesn't start like right as I turn the TV on because it's always streaming, so it's just like but I love it that way because I don't need the cold open. Like, I know that part, right? So it's fantastic for me.
Well, I know my next Raspberry Pi project.
Yeah, ERSATS TV, if you want to do it. ERSZ or something like that. It's really good. And I've been loving it. And yeah, I also set up a game show channel. So now I've got Price is Right and Wheel of Fortune and Family Feud.
Bring back Mr. Trebek. I love this idea.
Yeah, I'm going to put Jeopardy on there too. It's just been hard. I'm having a hard time getting my hands on it. So, all right, before we get out of here, is there anywhere you want to send the good peeps?
Yeah, go to alice.dev. Because I'm a dilettante, I don't have the promo code ready for you, but the new data gathering forms project is coming out very, very soon. And I can tell you what the code will be. It'll be coder.
There you go. That's simple.
10% discount.
Coder. There you have it. All right, that wraps us up. Of course, if you're interested in sponsoring this here show, email me, chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com. You can reach me on Weapon X, Chris LAS, or if you want to get a little weird, you can find me in the Nostra universe, chrislas.com for that.
Thank you, Chris.
It's weird. Links to what we talked about today, they're at coder.show/595. While you're there, you'll find our RSS feed, our contact form, links to the live stream, our Matrix chat, all of that. Oh, the live stream? I'm glad you asked. That's usually on Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. You can catch that at coder.show/live or in your podcasting 2.0 app. All right, that's it. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Coder Radio Program, and we'll see you right back here next week. Schmebulock. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate you.